Jimmy, how was ShoeFest 2025?
ShoeFest 2025, or also known as the go-kart, Duresta's go-kart track, or it's got so many hashtags. I see Duresta Kart, Duresta Go-Kart, Duresta Speedway, Jimmy Speedway, all these different hashtags. I never really officially made one, but when I, a couple of years ago, I was like, I need to put some branding here. So the day before, I came up with Jimmy's Speedway, and I usually make a keychain fob, but this year I just ran out of time, so I made a couple of stencils. So Jimmy Speedway is what we kind of jokingly call it. And so I laser cut out a stencil, so a lot of guys walk away with t-shirts they spray paint. It went great, and Carolina Shoe sponsored me and Paul and Derek for our videos. I want to keep that clear because they didn't sponsor the event, they sponsored our videos. And in those videos, we made shoes, and those shoes were at the event. I made a big Phantom Rider boot. Derek made a Double H boot. Derek's is 3D printed, so it looks like an advertisement, like exactly. Like they're probably going to take it and bring it somewhere to Texas maybe. And my boot looks like it was made by someone who just learned how to use paper mache.
Oh, come on.
No, at one point I realized it wasn't going to be an exact perfect replication, and it just kind of turned into...
Well, like it has an engine in it. Of course it's not a replication.
Yeah. But I also didn't 3D print it like Derek did. So Derek's is like absolutely perfect. And Paul did a really beautiful interpretation of a work boot made out of wood. That's what I was saying when you popped in, Dave, Bob. It was a beautiful fiberglass job. Paul just did such a great job. And it almost looks like it could be a boat. I said he should do a series of videos of it. Now it's a go-kart. Now it's a boat. Now it's, what else could it be? A plane.
Oh, yeah.
It could be a little plane. Put wings on it. And it was great. We had a great day. We had about 100. I have people now signing release forms by order of my lawyer. He says, absolutely no one's allowed on the track without a release form. And they sign a release, and then they get a wristband. So everybody had wristbands on. And so it was good. Rachel was helping, and a few other people looking around, making sure everybody had on a wristband, which means they signed. And everybody was happy to sign. I was always afraid to do that because it always kind of throws a monkey wrench into things. But everybody was happy to sign it, and it's also a good reminder that be careful. So, and
I'm sure everybody who wants to be involved would be happy to protect you.
Yeah, you know? No, everybody signed. Everybody, friends, everybody, family. Everybody signed just to, you know, keep the ball going. And it was fine. So by the end of the event, we had about close to 100, maybe 100, a little bit more, because by the end of the day, a couple of people showed up. So it was about 100 signed. So that's the first time we've had an official count, year six. 100 people showed up. And out of those 100 people, probably 25 people brought go-karts. 20, 25 people brought go-karts that they either bought or made. And this year, there was a couple of fun ones. We had the Chicky, I forget what he called it, Firecracker Chicky something. I forget what he called it. Martin from Kingston, he has a makerspace in Kingston. He made that. He always comes to all the stuff we do. And obviously the
Firecracker.
That's it. You're right. Firecracker. And Warren Works made an incredibly beautiful John Deere inspired. It was a pedal car. They took the nose of the pedal car and the pedals themselves to make the gas in the thing. But him and his, I think they're his cousins. He came with a whole crew of people. They all looked exactly the same. And they're all tall and skinny with a mop of hair on their head, like in various sizes. Christian, you know I love you. And they did such a beautiful job on their thing. It looked like it came right off. I said, it looks like you bought this at Tractor Supply. It looks amazing. And Papa Chad made a John Deere inspired go-kart out of like a racetrack go-kart, something, Dave, that you probably would have drove, you know, before he modified it. And yeah, there was so many more. It was great. I have enough to put together a good video. Musty came again. Darren from Musty One came again with a couple of fun go-karts. And Dave from DT Fab came. He was the brains behind Derek's go-kart. And when Derek makes the video, everyone's going to see he's like an amazing engineer and welder. And so Dave did a lot of work on the underside of Derek's go-kart. And he came with his drift trike 2 years in a row. And the big event this year was I had the Welder Underground. If you guys go follow them, maybe that's my recommendation this week, the Welder Underground on Instagram. The Welder Underground brought... It seems like they brought 30 people. I don't know how many people they brought. Maybe 10, maybe 12 people. When I met up with Adina, who owns Colab and also the Welder Underground, we met in Maker Faire like 10 years ago. And we met then and we went and we thought maybe we could collab. And she reached out to me a few months ago and said, is there anything we could do together? And I said, well, I have this go-kart thing coming up. And she's like, that's great. I'll have the welding students make a go-kart. And they had never worked with engines. They'd never worked with steering or things with wheels. And a lot of these kids are welding for the very first time. And so there was a team. It seemed like there was about 10, at least 10 kids on the team. And they made this go-kart that looks like it could climb up Mount Everest. It was incredible. But they all showed up, and they had throttle problems. So they kept getting on it and going around the track at 1 mile an hour because the pedal and the cable connection was kept slipping. And then when they finally got it working at the end of the day, they were ripping around the track. And the whole day ended when the kid crashed up onto the tires. And it was like nobody got hurt. They had a five-point restraint system on their seat. Wow. And they, like, it buckled right in the middle of your chest. And, of course, they all wore helmets. And so they all took turns on it. So when he crashed, he was just laughing when we went over. He was, like, all up on the tires. But, yeah, it was great. It was such a great weekend. It was, I guess, nobody got hurt. And we hired a paramedic on staff on scene to sit there all day long just in case, who had a direct connection to the local ambulance service. So she was cool. And everything went well. I put signs up, don't leave the property. A couple of years in a row, people ride on the road, like, show off their speeder. And, yeah, it was really good. That was it. So next year is going to be bigger and better. It was really great.
And I was impressed with...
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It was... The fabrication and the designs and the creativity involved was really cool.
It's a really good project because it involves... And you could see it. I say this in the Justin Mabee reel that's on my channel and his channel. It involves so many disciplines. Obviously, design and aesthetics, engineering in 50 different ways with the tires, the steering, the brakes, and the engine itself, and connecting the engine to the axle. There's a million choices in every one of those design aesthetics that you really have to figure out. And it's funny. I see people bumping their heads like, what do I do for this? How do I'm like, figure it out, figure it out. You know, a couple people ask me what they're working on. I said, just figure it out. That's what it's all about, just getting through it and figuring it out. And yeah, it's good. It's good. Fun. And then funny, the next year I'm hoping we get more crazy theme style things, like big stupid things like the firecracker and stuff like that.
I love big stupid things.
In my video, when you see me talking about when Justin's asking me questions about the go-kart event, I burst out laughing when Paul rides by in the background. It's the first time I see Paul scoot by. It's a real genuine laugh. It goes on for a long time because I could not stop laughing. But Paul's just so funny with his head sticking out of the shoe. He just tools by. It was the first time I'd seen it. It was the first time I saw it on camera. I knew he was there. He pulled up and he was on the other side of the road because he needed space to unload his trailer. So I saw it from afar. I've seen pictures of it. But while I was doing the interview, he just tools by. It was so funny. It was a real funny moment captured. And thank you to everybody that came, and everybody that's putting out beautiful reels. Justin, thank you for filming. And thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to Total Boat. And thank you to Lincoln Electric and everybody. Thank you.
Good. Glad it went well.
And Type-On. The thing is like 40% Type-On foam. Type-On. Oh. My go-kart is like 40% Type-On spray foam. Yep.
Awesome.
So next year.
Cool. David, what have you been up to?
The video that is coming out, I think, tomorrow. So yesterday for you. For the listeners, basically making a new router table that goes into the corner, and to make it a little bit more interesting and a little bit more effective for me, I got one of those, I forget what it's called, a little meter that measures airflow. It's got a little fan on there. And so we did a lot of before and after dust collection, and when you split it off, how much you lose. And so I made this router table that fits into the corner and then can slide out if you need even more room. But underneath there's a box that goes around the router portion. And then that box has a 4-inch port for dust collection. And so, and then off of that is a 2-inch port to go. So you have dust collection underneath and up top. And then we measured like the, with the split, without the split, and sealing off holes and everything, and we found that when you split it off, there was too much loss in suction, and so we got rid of the split. Just took a little different approach to the video of problems. There was like four problems we came across. And so it's kind of about making a router table, but it's more about like problem solving and making shop furniture. And it came out really good. I hate the router. It is my least favorite tool in the shop because it's just messy and loud and it's awkward and always, it's mean. I've never had a good position for it in the shop. And so all of that changed, although it's still loud, but hopefully I will use it more now that it's more convenient and much cleaner.
You should wire up some sort of a speaker to it so that every time you turn the router on, your favorite song plays as loud as possible over it. So it's still going to be loud, but at least there's something in there.
I like that. I also filmed a video. I asked my viewers to send me questions. So we're doing like an Ask Me Anything type video, which that's going to be another 5 or 6 days before that comes out. But one of the questions somebody sent was, would you rather work with shoddy materials and crappy tools, or would you rather listen to bad music in the shop all day? And I was like, 100%, I would rather work with crappy tools because bad music is, there's no place for bad music in my life. And it just puts me in the wrong mood. So,
So, okay. You're a musician. Jimmy, I know you have kind of a history with music. Let me, I'm going to step out of this entire conversation for just a minute. We were in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and we went to this, like, my family wanted to go, not my immediate family, my extended family wanted to go to this restaurant that was, like, outside. It's in St. Augustine, Florida, so it's, like, imagine the manifestation of Jimmy Buffett, right? It's, like, that type of just, like, hey, man, it's, like, cool, we're hanging outside, but there's water and 1,000 bugs, and, like, there's going to be seafood in about 2 hours. It's that kind of place. So there's this local band couple singing. They're getting paid to be on this stage in front of all the people at this restaurant. They're outside and they're just singing cover songs, you know, a bunch of like all sorts of stuff. And we noticed that there was a guy playing guitar and a woman singing, and the woman singing could sing. You could tell she could sing, but she would get to the end of a phrase and she would sing the last note. Mm-hmm. And then in the last like half a second or maybe second, it would go flat every single time. Not just like on occasion, but it would just be like, like every time. And I'm looking around at everybody and there's 100 people in this outdoor restaurant thing. And I noticed me and my son and my daughter, every time, and my wife mentioned it to me, so she saw it too. Every time this would happen, they just went like, and I did this too, would just kind of like it was like somebody like pulling on the back of my eyeball. That's what it felt like. And I look around and there's 100 people in here and nobody else notices or cares.
And so she doesn't know that she's doing it. She just thinks she's trailing off.
Yeah, I guess so. But the thing that was weird to me was that not everybody has that kind of reaction to music being bad and that's what I thought about it. Cause you said bad music.
Yeah.
But where stuff goes out of tune and it becomes dissonant, like that feels like somebody's pulling on something on the inside of my head.
Oh, wow.
But I looked around and noticed all these other people don't even care. Like they didn't notice it or whatever.
It's cause you know too much.
Maybe, I don't know. But my question to you as a musician is like, does stuff like that bother you too? Is there a visceral reaction to dissonance or tune or anything?
Is
it just me?
I don't know that it bothers me as much as you. I'm really curious about that situation to see if I would even notice or if I would have the same reaction. I can't stand music that's played on a phone and people listening to music on a phone for some reason, because there's an absence of bass, there's an absence of a lot of frequencies, and it just bothers me so much. I don't know. There's some.
It's probably the same feeling. I can imagine that it would be the same.
I'm like, why? This is not enjoyable. Because I go to the grocery store, and then somebody is shopping, pushing a cart with one hand, and they got a phone in the other hand, and they're listening to music. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't get that.
Let me tell you about one of my fears as a musician. I have this unrealistic fear. There's no reason I should have this, of being in a situation, a public situation, making it 500. There happens to be a stage with instruments on there, and I get forced up on stage to play in front of people when I'm not ready. Oh. And I get found out. They're like, oh, David can't play. That is a real fear that I have.
I'm with you. I would fear the exact same thing. Oh, well, now that we've said that, somebody's probably going to make that happen at making it 500.
Oh, hey, guys, I don't feel good. I got to go.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, the bad music thing, I'm with you. Like, it is difficult for me to listen to. And it's not even that it's bad music. It's just music I don't like. And I know that about myself, is that my bad music is just stuff that doesn't fit my preference, and it doesn't mean it's bad or whatever. But man, with the out of tune thing, I've noticed it at other places too. At what are they called? Like talent shows at my kid's school. You know, there's always some little girl or boy that thinks that they can sing really well, and then they get up there and it's like. And their mom's super proud, but it's really terrible. That really feels like somebody is just doing bad things to the inside of my brain.
Oh, man.
But this was the first time I had ever paid attention to that. It didn't bother anybody else. I thought that was a little bit weird.
There's a restaurant nearby that always has live music, and the musicians are the worst. Oh. So every time someone suggests going, I don't want to say it, but every time somebody suggests going over to Wyndham, going to this restaurant, I'm just like, in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to listen to people practice doing cover songs that are horrible. It seems like it's like a bunch of people that just like say, hey, I think I could play. It's never good ever in any way, shape or form. It's just like, this is the most irritating thing in the world. Can I just get the check and get the hell out of here?
My son, while we were at this place, we were talking about this, and, he said something about karaoke, and he was like, is this what karaoke is like? I think something like that. Now, a lot of people love karaoke. A lot of people in our maker community love karaoke, and I'm not trying to step on toes, but I hate karaoke.
Oh, they do karaoke at Maker Camp, and everybody gets drunk and everybody sings, and it's really fun and funny, but I just like, I would never get up there.
So I was telling him, he was like, is this what karaoke is like? And I'm like, yeah, because generally, this is generally, people who can't sing call it karaoke. People who can sing call it singing. And there's a big between
that's great
singing and karaoke. And the people that do karaoke have a blast, and that's great, and that's awesome. I cannot stand being around it. For the same reason, you know, that same just like, I don't know, something in my head. Anyway, that was a huge detour from what you were talking about, David.
I have only karaoke'd one time in my life, and it was Bust a Move by MC, Young MC.
Oh, nice. That's a good one. You don't have to sing in that one.
No.
So.
No. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm glad I ranted about that, because I don't really have anything to talk about as far as what I've been working on. So, I've been trying to catch up. It's weird, and I think I've talked about this, this time of year when it's summer, the kids are home, and the kids don't like eat up my day with my work day or anything, but just something about having everybody here and getting people to all the things that they're doing and stuff. Summer is so unproductive, or feels so unproductive to me. And, you know, we got back from Florida last week, and I kind of expected to jump right back into getting stuff done and starting on the videos. And it's just like, I spent an entire day cleaning my desk and answering email and paying bills and logistics type stuff that has to be done. But man, a day will just get away from you. So I don't feel very productive. I have like a bunch of stuff I need to design for future projects that I have to be able to sit down and focus on it to design, and I'm just not really clear enough to get that done. So it's been kind of weird. We are, some people, and you asked earlier about this, but some people have been asking me about the Fusion course update. And I did spend one day going through the edits that we have so far and making comments and all that stuff. 4B is like heads down in editing the rest of them. We are doing our best to get it done, to get the course finished hopefully soon. My goal is by the end of summer, but we haven't really set a date. We're working on it. And
Bob, I'll be a guinea pig when it comes out because I have to get back into Fusion. So
okay. Yeah.
I've been away too long. So when it comes out, I'll take the course and I'll be your premier student.
Okay. Sounds good. Everybody heard it. All 80,000 people that listen to this heard it. So they can all email you and give you a hard time if you don't.
Jimmy, it's sort of like watching a movie. Are you going to be able to sit down and just give it your full attention?
I will. Able to play with my computer while I watch, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, I mentioned in one of the things at the very beginning, it would be best if you watch this entire video before you try to do anything. And I point out that if you're like paying attention to your computer and not watching the video, you're going to miss out on
that's a good idea. I'll do it that way. Like that.
Cool. But I'm just trying to catch up and get all the little stuff done and trying to get the next project. I finally got a good day of filming yesterday and made some progress on the
Bob,
stuff.
I just give you a clue. You talked about a flat pack thing. Is that something you could talk about now? I want to ask you some questions.
So one of the things coming up soon is I bought a flat pack front bumper kit from this company that makes flat pack bumpers and rear bumpers for Land Cruisers. So it's kind of a modern, angular, kind of off-road looking bumper. And it was when he was first doing them, so it was going to be half price of what they were going to be eventually. So it's all laser cut steel. I think it's quarter inch.
Oh, it's heavy. Sure.
Yeah, it is definitely going to be a heavy bumper.
And do you weld it to the mounts? Does it come with mounts that match up to the frame rails?
Yeah. Yeah, it's made for that truck specifically, so yeah. I don't know that it's welded on. I think it's bolted on, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, so you could bolt it right, or you just unbolt your bumper and bolt this right in the same bolt pattern?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's made for a winch, which I have the winch ready. Mm-hmm. It's already got the little slot cut for it and everything, and it seems to be a pretty cool one. I'm excited about doing that. But anyway, coming up soon, I'm going to use the laser welder to try to weld that thing together. And then I'm trying to decide at this point whether I want to try to powder coat something like that because it's big and it's going to be heavy. Yeah. Or if I want to do some sort of a bed liner cover might be better for that. I don't really know. I haven't figured it out. But did you have a question about that project?
Oh, no. I was just asking if you laser cut it or if you bought it. Oh. That was really, I kind of had an inkling that you said you bought it, but I was just wondering, how heavy is the pack and is the thing like really hardy?
The pack wasn't too heavy. I mean, they shipped it in like a little cardboard box. It was about, 2 feet.
Oh, right, because it's angular, so it's like kind of the piece of together.
So it's a bunch of facets. And I don't know what the weight is, but it's probably 100 pounds. Yeah, I would guess. Yeah, so that'll be an interesting thing to try to figure out. I started to design one myself a couple of years ago. I think while the truck was in the shop, speaking of, it's still in the shop. And I started to design one and realized really quickly, like, I can make a bumper look like a bumper, but I don't have any idea what makes a bumper strong and what protects the car. You know what I mean? There's something about why they are made the way that they are made to cover and everything. And I realized pretty quickly, like, I don't think I trust myself to figure this out. So, and then this guy showed up with, like, hey, I'm making bumpers now. Check this thing out. And so,
you remember a few years ago, I did this video called Pimp My Truck. And I got all these parts from truck companies and put them all together on my new truck. The truck was only like a month old when I did it. And now I still have that truck. It's my 2018 Chevy 1500. And I had a bumper on the front and a bumper on the back. And I can't remember the name, but they have these iron crosses cut into them. And some people are like, poo-poo me for having the iron. I'm like, I didn't do it. This is how they come. And I took the front bumper off and I put the original bumper back on. And the back bumper, I've been sleeping on changing only because I have to remove, like, I have to remove bed bolts and lift the bed up because it hooks over the bed frame. So that's complicated. But the bumper, I've had it on the truck now since like 2018, maybe 2019. And it is completely 100% rusted. And it started rusting like 10 months after I put it on the truck. And I thought, I just can't, I wish I could remember the name of the company. I'm like appalled. Like, if I paid $2,000 for this bumper and it immediately started rusting, I don't even know how the company's still in business. And what's funny is that when I put that video out, you can go to the comment section. Several people said, I have those on my truck. They're extremely rusty. They rust immediately.
Interesting. What kind of coating was on it?
It says it was powder coat. But last night I walked by the truck and I just said, I got to paint it. It looks horrible. I got to paint this. And I grabbed like a flake of the powder coat and picked it up. And there's like layers of rust under it. Like, it's been under the ocean. It wasn't just like for years, just the powder coat would peel off. And now I picked it up, and because it's been like a wafer over it, it's been holding water. I picked it up, and it's like five layers of like rust. It was like a croissant of rust. I picked it up, and I was just like, man, this thing is gonna be. I don't care that it's pitted. Like, in time, I still have my bumper that was on the car, and for the last 8 years, every time I get in the car, it's like, your backup things aren't working. I'm like, I know. And again, the car's like, hey, your backup things still aren't working. I'm like, I know, because it's in the sensors on the bumper. And I always figured I'd go back. So I just left the plug underneath the truck. I never cut it off. I tried to terminate it. And so obviously this new bumper with the newer bumper with all the D-rings on it and stuff looks very manly. You know, I look like a patriot, I'll put it that way. And it looks horrible, and I got to change. I've been kind of sprucing that truck up a little bit, so I'm gonna get rid of it. I took the front one off, and I gave it to a friend who put it on one of his trucks because it had the lights built into it. Anyway, I'll send you a picture of it. But if you're gonna powder coat it, just do it extra.
Yeah,
this might have only been painted. I don't know. I mean, I never really got. I got it through a third party, so I didn't get it from the company directly. And then it wasn't until a couple years later I was at SEMA and I bumped into the guys and I was walking through their booth. And in my mind, I was just like, I can't believe they're still in business. And then they asked me, they're like, what can we help you with? I'm like, well, I have your bumpers on my car. And they're like, oh, you do? And I was like, well, I know so-and-so. And he got me a set of your bumpers. They're like, oh, yeah, we remember that. Like, how are they doing? I'm like, oh, they're completely rusty. And they're like, yeah, that happens. We're trying to fix that. And that was like basically the conversation.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. I can't remember the name of the company. Everybody knows who they are. I forget. If you're in the truck business, you know the Patriot-looking bumpers, everybody knows. Yeah.
Cool.
So anyway, so just be careful. Buy everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really thought that far into coating it. Powder coat would be cool, but it is going to be such a big thing that getting that evenly baked.
Yeah, you got something like that you'd bring to a service because they have a big oven. You know, they just put it on a rack and put it in there.
Yeah,
and it's not that expensive because I've had my go-kart frame powder coated many times. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
I know up at First Build in Louisville, they have a big oven, and I remember when we were touring up there one time, they walked us, like, we went into the oven, and they were talking about how cool it is just to be able to, like, powder coat giant things and stuff like that. So I could go up there probably and ask to use that one. They're pretty great. but I don't know.
I'm going to see
driving something like that to Louisville is not that far away, but inconveniences like that make me not take advantage of opportunities just because I would have to, like, put it on a trailer, drive it up there, spend the afternoon waiting for it to cook, put it on the trailer and drive it back.
Love barriers. I collect barriers all the time.
Yeah. Barriers is a good topic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everything is a barrier.
Yes.
Speaking of topic, David, you kind of had a topic from last week that we actually wrote it down and we're coming back to do it this week. Yes, we're getting the hang of this thing.
The problem is, I don't know what I was thinking when I said it.
Oh.
But the topic is the blessing and a curse. And I can't remember what brought that thought into my brain. Maybe it was something to do with when you have the freedom to do whatever you want, that is a blessing, but too many options, too many choices. So maybe we can start there. I know for sure when I start a new project, if there's not a deadline, I won't start the project. I will put it on my potential shelf and collect ideas until I'm ready. And it's kind of like where the having sponsors kind of forces me to get to work. And it's like having sponsors, maybe that's what I was thinking, sponsors, blessing and a curse. So a sponsor forces me to get to work, but the curse is I have to mention the sponsor, which some people don't like. But it's a necessity. If you want a creator to make a video, they need to get paid so they can continue making videos.
That's why lately, I mean, it's few and far between. Everybody knows this business is kind of drying on the vine, but I go for yearly deals as much as possible. I try and go those yearly deals so that it's more of a, and I always say it's more of a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle branding versus it's a brand awareness and lifestyle branding versus it's like, don't expect me to do one video on your thing and it be a big deal. I said, because you might not even get one click through.
I mean, that's how good branding works. Branding isn't about one advertisement. It's about awareness. And that awareness happens over time. And so if you can get those yearly deals, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're obviously, everything's few and far between now. But I wonder what's going to happen with this business. This is obviously a different conversation with, you know, kids don't watch TV at all anymore. And the news networks, you know, like everybody I know gets all their news from YouTube. And independent news people versus, you know, the established news. And I just wonder if that's going to be more opportunities for people like us that make content. I keep expecting the bubble to burst and it get better. It was really good in the beginning, and then it lulled out. And I think it lulled out, and I could be wrong. I think it lulled out a little bit because basically where there was a lot more money early on, people realized that we would take whatever anybody offered. You know, in the beginning, it was like, oh, we got this. Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. And then versus like now, like, oh, this, they know there's not a lot of people knocking on, at least in my door. So the opportunities are just fewer and far between. And the amounts are often lower than they used to be. I can't even cite a specific example. It's been so, you know, like you could tell when there's like a Dollar Shave Club or something going around because you hear it in the podcast, you hear it on, you know, you hear it on your favorite podcast and you see it on your favorite YouTuber. And then, you know, we would get offered the same thing. So
yeah,
these are people with a budget and then they spread it across. And then what also started happening too, is they started doing the micro influencers, where it's funny because I had a really big deal with Lowe's for a minute there several years ago, way before the pandemic. And it was a lump sum of money. It was a huge sum of money. It was, you know, a couple $100,000 plus to do a lot of work for them. And then they didn't renew me. And then I started talking to other people and they're all like, oh yeah, I got a deal. And so they took whatever they would have given me at the time when I was hot and spread it across 25 other smaller people. And I was like, it sucks for me, but it's a really good idea for them because they probably get more bang for their buck.
Oh yeah. They did the same thing for me.
Sprinkling it across all these younger, smaller channels.
Yeah.
And it's really clever marketing. That, you know, took us by surprise, but so be it. I want to be a micro influencer now so I can keep paying my bills.
I do because there's so many more creators. And like, if you work with an agency, your agent is going to, when they're talking to the Dollar Shave Clubs or whatever, they're not going to just pitch Jimmy DiResta. They're going to pitch, oh, I have five creators. We'll spread this out over five creators. And it kind of levels out their expectations and views because it's being spread through more creators. So, which can mean maybe it's less money or whatever. But for me, I'm seeing less opportunities come through my inbox. And so I've been really pushing my Patreon this year and that has helped. And I see me relying on Patreon in the coming years because maybe next year Squarespace doesn't do the year long deal and then I'm going to be hurting. So, I like that there is a group of people who believe in what I do so much, and for this podcast, who believe in this podcast so much that we don't have to have advertisers and we can do whatever we want. There's no influence. There's nothing. And I see the future. I see that as my future over sponsored segments. It's just people paying to because they believe in me.
I would prefer for that to be my future. Yeah. I don't know that it's realistic. I mean, for me, I'm not speaking for you or for anybody else, but just the way that type of support has, like, it makes this show possible, but this show doesn't have a whole lot of overhead. You know, it doesn't have a lot of, like, we're good.
Yeah.
I like to make stuff, like, the people are amazing. The group that we have there is super supportive, and I'm glad that they are there, but for that level of support to grow to replace the other income sources, like, I don't know that that's realistic, ever been realistic for me. Mm-hmm. I wish it were, because I'm the same way. I would prefer for that to be who I was beholden to, you know, is the people rather than the companies. But I don't know. Back to the blessing curse thing. I do think around, like, being self-employed, about running your own thing, whatever it is, it's probably obvious to everybody, but if not, it is a huge amount of work. So I guess you could say that's a curse, in that it's an excessive amount of input that you have to put in. The blessing side of it is obviously you get to do what you love and you get to kind of set your own, you know, you can take time off when you need to, but you don't really just take time off all the time because that's not how it works. So, I mean, there's a bunch of blessing curse, you know, two sides to the whole thing. One of the things, so I was listening to this book recently, and it actually gave me a different perspective on my own situation. It's a finance book, and I'm not really sure how I feel about it yet, but he talks about, they call it the something quadrant. Anyway, it breaks people into this quadrant. And on one side, there's employees and small business owners. On the other side, there's, like, large business owners and investors. And then so the whole book is comparing how those four groups of people think about work, think about money, think about investment, think about savings, think about growth. So it compares, like, the different perspectives of those different people. And you don't have to be exclusive to one of those groups. You can be in multiple groups. But when he talks about the self-employed people, or the business, small business owners, I guess is the way he talks about it, he talks about the limitations of being in the position that we're all in, because a lot of times we have this, like, I'm going to go do this thing on my own, which is great. It's a good motivation, but it also means I'm going to go do this thing on my own, meaning that I don't really want to rely on other people for all the different parts of the thing. I don't trust anybody to edit the videos as well as I edit them, or up with the ideas as well as I come up with them. And he was talking generally, right? Not about content. This book was written, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something. But he was saying stuff like that about how the limits of our businesses are often because we are so self-reliant. And as I was listening to him say all this,
it makes me really uncomfortable that he's right.
I was going to say, I think he's 100% right. But then I compare that to when I had a bunch of employees with my brother and I, and I still love this freedom. I mean, I'm not financially set free. I don't have millions of dollars in the bank. But the freedom that I have to wake up and not have to talk and share ideas and quell ideas that I don't like. You obviously have to tiptoe around everybody's feelings. Even my friends that are around here, you know, they're like, oh, why don't you, you know, you should, how about, you know, it'd be really cool. You know, I listen to that 50 times a day from the people that I love and live with. And they're like, I'll shut up. I just look up.
Yeah.
And I go ahead.
Well, somebody's here.
Yeah. So it's funny. Patrick said this yesterday. You guys know Gil, of course. Gil from Australia is staying with me. He's in town for the Light Burn event. So Gil's staying with me for a couple of days. And we were joking about how everyone, like, stands around and makes suggestions. And he made a couple of suggestions. And Patrick said, when he goes, uh-huh, mm-hmm, he goes, that means, yeah, I'm going to just ignore you. Because Patrick was around. He goes, I learned early on. He goes, just stop giving him suggestions. He's already thought of it before you even opened your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you,
we had a laugh about it.
I think we're similar in, like, I like owning my ideas. I want the idea to come from me and from somebody else. There's just that satisfaction that goes with that. Is it upsetting when somebody else actually has a good idea that
I mean, because I look at, like, what I've created, and I have a pretty substantial base of, like, original ideas around me that I've originated and initiated. And even if it's not original ideas, you know, I did it, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And here's a perfect example. When working on the Woody, and I made these side doors, that you got the doors that are on the cab that came with the car, and then the next set of doors between those doors and the rear wheels. And on every traditional Woody, it's just like a second set of four doors, you know, second set of doors. And Rob was hanging around. We were fiddling around. And this was before there was really any wood on it. Rob goes, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they were gull wing? And I was like, that's it. Like, it just struck a nail on the head. I was like, they have to be gull wing. And that's it. And so now I give Rob 100% credit for the idea of the gull wing doors. And yesterday I got them opening and closing. I'll send you guys a picture. So we got the gull wing doors. yesterday was the experiment trying to get the pump jacks on there, the ones that you would hold open a car tailgate with. And the ones I have are too short, so I have to get ones. I bought new ones from Amazon that come in a couple days. But I sent you guys pictures of the secondary doors gull wing. So it looks like a bird when they're opened up. It looks cool.
That's awesome.
And the idea is that it'll be like a camper. You know, so you got an awning on both sides, and you got a good pass through, so it could be like a good hang. I this thing is, you know, the day the last video is done, this thing's going to get pushed into the weeds, and I'm probably never going to use it. But I am meeting the guy I bought it from today. He's going to sign some paperwork, which hopefully will lead to a registration. I have insurance on it, so I might be able to make it drivable.
Nice. Huh.
You know, legally drivable. It is drivable at the moment. But.
One of those things that I have worked on with myself is, like, my brother would come up with ideas while we're working, and for a long time I would just say, no, 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 no. And now I say, I'll think about it. And I've gotten much better at that, because what happens is I say, no, 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 no. And then, like, later on, I'm like, oh, that actually was a good idea. I was just being too controlling of the situation. So
yeah.
I've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
No, so you said something about the money aspect of it early, Jimmy. And this book that I was listening to, that's one of the points that he's making, in that, like, if you try to run your whole thing, if you're in that quadrant, that's the way he voices this whole thing, you have the control and you have the scope management of the whole thing. But there's a limit, and we've all hit this limit, right? There's a ceiling to how much money you can make when you are the one doing all the work. And that's his point as far as this quadrant thing, is that if you're on this side, there's limits to certain things, but you have a certain amount of freedom. If you're over here, you have stability, but you have a limit on the income. On this side, it's like you have the potential for high income, but there's kind of risk, and there's work, and there's long, you know, so he kind of, it's all comparison stuff. It's not saying that you should always be over in this position, but I think that's the blessing curse thing of that. He points out about the position that we're all in, and any other self-employed people, is you get to a physical limit where you just, there's not enough hours in the day. And that's okay if the freedom, like you're saying, is the thing that you actually, that's, you're wealthy if you have freedom.
Yes.
If you have,
yes.
If you can set your day and decide where you want to spend your time, I mean, you are a rich person, because the majority of people in the world do not have that luxury, you know?
Well, it's funny. I don't know if I said this last week. I said it somewhere or someplace, but somebody made some comment, like, da 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 da. And I wrote back, I was like, it was a rude comment trying to, like, get me to get my goat. And I just said, I built a pretty good life for myself. I'm very happy. I get to do what I want, and I get to make videos and share them with the people that appreciate them. I said, I made a pretty good life for myself. So I said, I'm happy with where I'm at. It was something about, like, change in this. It was like some veiled double-edged comment, which was kind of rude. And I just wrote back. I said, I didn't fight. I just said, I'm really happy with the life I created for myself. I have no regrets.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there's two sides to all of the stuff around, you know, working for yourself, and it can be really easy to, for me, to focus on, at different points in my career, like, I'm missing out on this. Because I am where I am, I'm missing out on this. And it's really easy to forget about the, but I'm also getting,
this.
I get to go to all my kids' stuff, which there are so many parents who cannot say that.
Yeah, you'd be on a business trip missing all these key moments, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and even just like on a daily basis, I can't get off work to go to your play or to your game or to your performance or to, you know, or to pick you up when you're sick. Like, I just can't do that. And so it's easy for me to be like, well, yeah, I mean, the income, the YouTube stuff goes up and down all the time. And that's kind of like hard to plan for and hard, you know, that's frustrating and stuff. But at the same time, like, if I need to not work this week and go take care of somebody, I can do that. And that's... Yeah. Pretty amazing, you know.
Yeah, me and Gil were talking over coffee before I started with you guys. Gil, because Gil's in the kitchen, and we're talking about freelancing. And I said, I go, I've been a freelancer my whole life. I've always been a freelancer, and so this low hum of worry has become white noise. It's always there. That this is going to be my last job, or this is going to be my last thing, or this is where I got to begin to start selling things. That low hum is always there, but I'm so used to it at this point that it doesn't scare me anymore. It's just that low hum in the background. I'm like, what's that noise? Do you hear that? Oh, that's the potential for complete failure. It's always like, it's like my shadow's always like doing this behind me. Like, yeah. don't forget, you could, and that's a bad choice. You don't need that car. You don't need that tool. You know?
Well, and so there's another thing I heard recently, and I don't know, I don't think it was in the same book, but it was about fear and about how all people have the same emotions. No matter where you're at, no matter what you're doing, we all experience the same things: happiness, fear, joy, worry, you know, all the things. But how you respond to those emotions says a lot about, and you can change this, but it says a lot about what is going to happen next, right? So fear could be fear of that, what you're just talking about, fear of like, this is the last bit of money I'm ever going to make. Could be the thing that sets you in a spiral that says, well, I guess I should find something else to do. I need an office job. I need a whatever, you know. Or it could be the thing that says, well, then I need to come up with another idea to make money or another idea to stabilize my future. Fear doesn't necessarily have to lead to a negative response or that like worry of, is this job going to continue to do what it's done for me so far? It doesn't have to lead to a negative response or shutting something down. It can lead you to like, okay, well, what's next? Or how do I expand my offering? Or how do I, you know, do the year-long thing so that you have a little more stability around the same amount of work? And I thought that was pretty cool because I think a lot of times our responses to emotions, we pin them on our chest and like, this is how I respond to fear, and this is how I respond to worry, and this is how I respond to people making fun of me or giving me a hard time, and that's just how I am. But it doesn't have to be like that, right? So you can decide, well, I'm going to stop responding to fear with worry or with, you know, worst case scenario kind of situation. You know, you can decide to use those things in a different way for your whatever. And so stuff like that, I've been hearing and reading a lot lately, and I don't know if I'm making connections between it all or if there are already connections that I'm just realizing or whatever, but I think something about like the lack of stability in owning your own business and the control and the freedom, they're all kind of the same thing. And it's hard some of them feel negative and some of them feel positive, but it's kind of all the same thing. And I've just been kind of swirling on that, trying to figure out how they all relate, you know? So you can look at those things as blessing and curses, but I think they're all probably a little bit more related, the same thing. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'll get off my couch now and you all can.
No, I'm a big believer in deciding to feel this way or deciding to be this way about certain things. That is easier said than done. There's usually something I'll listen to in an audiobook or read in a book, or I'll see in a video, something you need, something to flip that switch to help that decision, you know? And that's why I enjoy reading so many audiobooks, because somebody will just convince me like, yeah, you can just decide to ignore negativity. You can just decide to be happy with your situation. And I wish it was easy as just making that decision, but sometimes you have to just say it out loud and it works. Like if I say, you know what, comments aren't going to bother me today. And then I go to read the comments. For some reason, they don't bother me that day. I don't know why, but if I just say it, my brain believes it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of, you know, I'm not a person that believes in, like, you can manifest whatever you want by saying it, which is not what you're saying at all. But there are a lot of people that if I just get up every morning, I say, I'm going to have $1 million today, then they expect that to happen. I don't think that's realistic, but I do think that setting your response, like you're saying, setting your response ahead of time to things makes it a lot easier to have the response that you want to things. And sometimes that is just by literally saying it out loud to remind yourself, I'm not going to let the comments bother me or whatever.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, like the kind of looking at hard, like deciding gratitude is an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you decide to be thankful ahead of time for like, oh man, I get so many great comments. I get so many people who are encouraging and uplifting to me. Then when you're faced with the other stuff, that thing is present in your mind. Yeah, but I'm really blessed with a lot of great comments, a lot of encouragement as well. And it you know, kind of takes the wind out of the sails of the negative thing if you've kind of reminded yourself about how much positive stuff you already have. So
I'm a total weirdo by myself. I am talking to myself out loud all the time, but it helps. I was talking to my brother about this a couple weeks ago, and he's like, yep, I'm the same way. So it made me feel better to hear a relative who also talks to himself out loud.
I think more people do that than you would imagine. I know. Good. I do. I mean, yeah. I don't know if people admit it or not, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on blessings and curses or the kind of two-sidedness of being self-employed?
It's just life. Good with the bad.
Yeah.
But then you realize, like I said, I wouldn't have it any other way at this point. If somebody offered me a full-time job that I would make $500,000, but I have to go to New York City, I'd be like, I'm okay.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, the perks are too good to pass up.
Yeah, I like being in control of my life, and hopefully I don't ever have to give that up and work for somebody else, even if it means making less.
Yeah. I do think it's probably important to point out that these are our opinions about working for ourselves because we've all been doing it for a long time. There are a lot of people who actually excel by working for somebody else in certain situations, you know, certain jobs that are like what they want. And it's easy in the kind of self-employed creator community to make it sound like, you know, you have to be your own boss to be happy. And I don't think that's the case. I think that's the case for a lot of us because of who we are. But
I'd work full time for anybody as long as I could do it in my backyard.
Well, that's true. Like, there's a lot of conditions that would make it worthwhile. That $500,000, but I could work from my basement? Sure.
Let's do it.
Send me the contract.
Yeah. That's it.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. Unless you guys got anything else? Huge thanks to everybody over at Patreon that makes this show happen. That gives us the opportunity to work for ourselves. And honestly, like, it's pretty amazing that we get together every week and we get to do this. And you know, they help it happen. They pay us to do this show and talk about these things. And so, we're very, very grateful for everybody over at Patreon at every level because it all matters. But huge thanks to our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Matthias Garnow, A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., and Pete Rondeau.
Everybody.
Big thanks to everybody over there. And they all get the after show. That's extra show after this one. And today I'm going to tell you about the state of the Land Cruiser. Again. Ooh. And my injury. I'm injured.
Oh, no.
I'm going to tell you about those things. The after show is only available through Patreon, so you have to go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up, and then you can get the RSS feed, put it in your podcast player. You can listen to it. We have links for YouTube. You can watch it. So go over there and check that out. All right. Do you have anything to recommend?
I'm sending you guys, I just sent you guys the Welder Underground. Go follow, check a look at the go-kart these guys built. Send them some encouragement. They made this, never made a cart before. It's amazing. The thing looks like an ejector seat. It's crazy. Cool. Yeah, so go check out, go say hi. Welder Underground in Brooklyn. And if you're in Brooklyn or in New York, you want to learn how to weld, go check out the Welder Underground Makerspace.
It's a makerspace.
Yeah, and okay. They teach kids. They teach local kids.
Awesome.
Mine is Bigelow Woodcraft. I just came across this video the other day, and it looks like this guy, he has a business where he makes wooden things, and he made a video about how he made he calls it a gravity bar, a thing that holds papers. So there's like a ball bearings on the inside that traps the paper between the wood and the ball bearings. And it is a really well done video. I was thoroughly entertained, very dry humor in there that made me laugh out loud a couple times, and just a very well done video and somebody you should check out.
Awesome. Okay. Mine is a video I haven't watched yet, but I know I'm going to like it because it's Bo Miles. Now this was sent over. I hadn't had a chance to watch it yet. But one of our Patreon members, John Filmingham, sent this over and specifically said, I wanted to let you know, especially Bob, about this video so that you have a pick. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anyway, it's Bo Miles from Australia. Oh, my earpod just fell out of my ear. Anyway, he's planting trees. Plants 4 trees for every 1,000 views. So you watch the video, and every view is planting trees, which I think is really cool. Plus, he seems pretty awesome. I really enjoy watching his videos. So go check out Bo Miles. I'm going to go watch it as soon as we're done recording.
There's certain creators you watch and you're like, his heart and brain, they're in the right place. Like yeah, you can just tell, like he's a good dude.
Yeah. I like him a lot. Cool. You guys got anything else for this week?
That's it.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll catch you next time.
Mm-hmm.